proudly student and listener-supported community radio. CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking to Sid Ryan, former president of the Ontario Federation of Labour and CUPE Ontario, and look into the State of the Union. As we're going to be reaching him shortly. And a latter part of the show, we'll be talking to Rick Sterling of the Serious Solidarity Movement. And Rick, by the way, you can find but in both these gentlemen, both Sid Ryan and Rick Sterling are part of this new public world called Twitter. I would really urge all our listeners to go to the accounts of such people, writers and thinkers as Sid Ryan and Rick Sterling. Rick Sterling will be talking about the problem of U.S. hegemony around the world and how it disrupts, does not actually aid, but disrupts international relations. And he'll be focusing on matters to do with Syria and Nicaragua most recently. I think we're joined by Sid Ryan himself. Are you there, Mr. Ryan?
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Very good. I'm very glad to be talking to you. You have been, I was just telling our listeners, they really ought to be going to your Twitter account because you have, you're keeping track of what goes on, despite the fact that you're, I think you're retired.
Yes, I am, yeah.
You certainly haven't walked away from the movement. You're very concerned about its direction and the problems that it's facing. And I want to talk about, of course, the one that is on the front pages of our papers, I think coast to coast, and that is that Unifor, which is probably one of the best-known unions, is going to have a convention in about 2 weeks, perhaps. And they are going into this convention under a cloud because of the scandal, I guess I can use that word, involving their leader who has stepped aside, Jerry Dias. But also they have contending, now they're going to have a real contest. This is kind of rare, actually, a real, looks like a Donnybrook, between the various leaders of Unifor. And you've been commenting on it. I guess I would start with that. The Unifor represented in 2011 what they called a new vision. And a matter of fact, there are advocates for that writing today supporting the candidate Lana Payne. And they say, well, we had a glitch of some a bit with Jerry, but we really have a great vision. Commenting on this, you actually say, no, you don't have a great vision. What is this? Talk about your perspective on it.
Well, okay, first off, you know, the issue here, of course, was Jerry Dias took a stipend, I guess, from a supplier. And, you know, which was a violation of the Unifor Code of Ethics. So, you know, and that forced his resignation. And essentially that now has opened up an election, because in the past it's been a very much a closed shop affair as to who succeeds the president inside of the old CAW and now Unifor. They have what they call like an executive committee, a leadership team that makes a recommendation mainly based on what the president wants. And then they bring that to the National Executive Board. They get rubber stamped at the board. And then anybody who dares to run against the choice of the NEB or the choice of the president generally ends up in a smear campaign is what normally happens. They try to sully the name of the person and force that person to drop out and not actually have an election. But at the founding convention in 2015, I believe it was, they ended up, it might have been actually 2013, 30, and I'm not certain now. But in any event, he ended up with an election. And he went after the sister who ran against Jerry Dyes on the floor. She got something like 30% of the vote, or 20% of the vote, with no campaign and just basically doing it right off the floor of the convention. So this time around, given all the shenanigans that have happened with Jerry Dyes, and he named his successor as being a guy called Scott Doherty, and it looked like he was going to be romping home until the scandal broke. And now people are saying, well, wait a second, this guy was really close to Jerry Dyes, and rightfully or wrongfully, he's been tagged with being part of the old guard, which was Jerry Dyes' team. Mm-hmm. Now, an investigator came in, independent investigator, to take a look at what actually transpired. And he named this guy Doherty as one of the fellas who was putting pressure on the whistleblower, Chris McDonald, mm-hmm. to drop his case. And it was mentioned several times where he had not only phoned and tried to talk with McDonald after he'd been told not to do so. He actually went around to his in-law's home to meet with him. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, the investigation also found that he wasn't very cooperative, in that Doherty was asked to supply emails and documentation, which he kept saying he would do, but never did. Mm-hmm. And the report noted that. So out of all of that, of course, not long after that, Lana Payne decided that she was going to enter the race. She's the current Secretary Treasurer. And there was also a guy from Windsor named Dave Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And Cassidy had already said at the very beginning, like months ago, I'm running for president, regardless of what the executive board do or don't do, there'll be an election. Mm-hmm. So, of course, now we've got three basically high-profile candidates all running for president, and that's basically the first time this has happened in the history of the CAW and now the new Unifor. So just to go back to your question about the division, I actually think at the beginning that they did have a good vision. Their vision was about social unionism and making alliances with people in the community, be poverty activists, women's organizations, the LGBTQ community, and making strong alliances with those folks in a common front. Actually, it's what I called for in my book that I wrote after leaving the OFL. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, they also said that they would go out and organize the non-organized, those folks who don't belong to a union but need and would like some union representation in the community. They would organize those folks as well. Mm-hmm. So the vision was really progressive. The problem was the implementation of the vision. Dyes basically mangled the vision by instead going off and raiding other unions inside of the labor movement. Mm-hmm. To the point where he pulled his money and his membership out of the CLC and all of the Federation of Laborers across the country, thereby weakening the labor movement. And in return then, the labor councils were forced to kick all of the uniform members out of labor councils. So now the union that was meant to be, you know, Unifor, it was a takeoff of unifying the labor movement, ends up being a pariah based on the policies of one individual who actually, as I say, mangled what was a great vision. Mm-hmm. So now you've got four of the main authors of that vision have just come out and essentially, well, they tried to say that, you know, we had a great 10 years, well, when in fact he didn't. You can't see it a great 10 years when Dyes weakened the labor movement mm-hmm. By raiding other unions. But Lana Payne is basically, she's got a campaign that's essentially saying that she will take that vision and will in fact breathe some life into it and regain the good name of Unifor, and at the same time talk with the labor movement about rejoining the CLC and Federations of Labor and Labor Councils. And if that happens, that would be a very positive outcome.
I had not noticed that. So you're saying that it's part of Lana Payne's campaign is to say that they would sort of reopen communications and perhaps return to the CLC?
Yes, she talks about it, mentions, and if you look at her platform, she actually mentions that it was time that we opened up discussions with the rest of the labor movement. I mean, it, you know, have to read between the lines to be able to see that she's talking about having the
we go from the fine print to reading between lines.
Yeah, but also too, I mean, I've known that she was a president of the Newfoundland Federation of Labor.
Uh-huh.
So, and I mean, I've known her for years. I sat on committees with her.
Going back, was she part of the CEP or was she part of CAW?
No, she was part of CAW.
Uh-huh.
In Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
But always was very progressive. So she's a progressive candidate. And I've no doubt in my mind that she would work towards bringing Unifor back into the House of Labor.
Well, we certainly, I think your comments are very helpful. I hope that everybody just pastes that on their board, you know, and so that when discussions about Unifor and its future take place, that there's a reference to what you've written. I urge people, go to, it's at Sid Ryan, it's at P-S-I, you know, P-S-I-D, Sid,
yeah.
P-Sid Ryan.
And it's also all on my Facebook page as well.
And on the Facebook. And of course, you've reached that point where people just put Sid Ryan and they'll find out. But
exactly.
It needs to be underlined. And Sid Ryan's the author, by the way, of A Grander Vision. I'm glad everybody's interested in the word vision. But, you know, you spell out in your book of your own 30 years in the labor movement what unions are supposed to be about, and you underline the concept of social unions and politically active. And I read the statement by the four individuals who used to be in some form as part of leadership. They actually make no reference to social democracy. When they say politics, they mean opposition to the Harper. They're against, but they're not for, if you follow. It strikes me that, you know, you're asking people to be a little more specific than that and take a side, right? I mean, that's the story of labor. Take which side you want.
No question about it. You're dead on. I mean, these folks that wrote that piece, you know, they were essentially in the Jerry Dias camp, which was currying favor with the liberals. And you know, essentially what the policy is we will support any political party that supports us, our air cause. And air cause in some cases is, you know, we want special tax breaks and we want dividends be given over to the multinational corporations that run the auto sector. So, and of course, that's damaging to healthcare and education, because every dollar you give to General Motors is a dollar less that we have to spend on healthcare and education.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys were the authors of this kind of a policy. And it got so twisted that in the end, they actually stood beside Doug Ford, for God's sakes.
That was the last time I saw him publicly, who was standing behind Ford.
Yeah, him and Smokey Thomas. Now, mind you, if you read the report, there's logic to it about what he was doing, because he was, the way the report came out was, he was on the verge. No, this was the minutes of the minutes of their executive board meetings.
Yeah, which, by the way, isn't that available at the Unifor site?
That's available at the Unifor site, exactly.
So everybody should know this is a matter of an open process. Go ahead.
He was on the verge of leaving, quitting the Unifor, and taking up an appointment by Doug Ford down in Washington to be some sort of a labor attaché in Washington. He said, you know, that he was under tremendous pressure from the government, and they've made a case for him that he finds it very hard to turn down. Now, this was on the day that he nominated Darvey to be his successor. So what he was doing was he was rushing this meeting, this endorsement through. But it looked like he was on the verge of packing it in anyways before the scandal got to him, and he was going to take the appointment by Doug Ford down in Washington.
I think you pointed out on your Twitter account, nobody objected to what he was saying.
This is the sad part. You know, It was like, you would have thought that somebody would have sat up and said, like, for God's sake, what are you talking about?
Yeah. What meeting am I attending?
How can you be interviewed for or be taking an appointment from a Tory? And you know what I mean? And packing in the leadership of the largest private sector union in the country to take up an appointment given to you by a Tory. Like, you destroy the credibility, not only of your own union, but of the entire Labour movement if you do that. But, of course, it was always about himself, just like, you know, becoming a senator was for Hassan Youssef was all about himself as well.
Indeed.
Two peas in a pod, both of them from the old CAW, right?
Yeah, and by the way, you don't get, when they get these plum appointments, something has happened. There's a little chemistry involved because those appointments aren't given to people who don't provide service.
Well, you know, I mean, listen, the whole plan from Ford in that last election was to demonstrate how the Labour movement, in other words, the working class were no longer with the NDP, and in fact they were over with Doug Ford. So you got a handful of business agents from the construction trade unions who basically don't represent anybody to come out and say, oh, we're endorsing Doug Ford. And then, of course, they had Smokey Thomas and Jerry Dias, part of that same game plan, standing on the podium. And of course, he's promised a job down in Washington. And the whole plan was to go into the election saying, you know, the two biggest unions in the province, the private sector union and the public sector union, together with all the construction trades, are all supporting Doug Ford. That was the plan.
Yeah.
Until, you know, Dias blew it all up with what happened.
Well, and I, by the way, we should remind listeners that we're, speaking to Sid Ryan, and it just Google Sid Ryan, but particularly I would urge you now to follow him on Twitter. But you had your own bitter experience with these individuals because, actually, as you said, you liked the idea, the greater vision that they had, but they went to work on the CLC leadership. They removed somebody in the name of a more progressive system, but it wasn't long after that, once they got the CLC job, that raiding took place, and their individual, that who is now an honorable senator, took the side of Unifor, who was doing the raiding against other CLC members who were being raided.
That's right. He tried to suspend Article 4 of the CLC Constitution, which give protections to unions against raiding from their fellow unions. He suspended that section of it, basically saying that ATU were not entitled to use that section of the Constitution. Now, luckily for ATU, what happened was the rest of the union, like not the rest, but a big fair chunk of the rest of the union movement, QP, UFCW, steelworkers, others, sent a letter to the president, Hassan Youssef, and basically told him that he had no choice but to give the protections under the Constitution to ATU and run an investigation.
We lived through a period where my memory was that the CLC nearly exploded. It was close to being dynamited as a result of that.
Behavior. These guys would have packed into the CLC. I mean, there would have been a mass exodus out of the CLC. Because what would be the point in belonging to an organization that sanctions raids against each other's unions? That would have been crazy. But this is how far this guy was willing to go, to curry favor with Unifor. Now, mind you can see why. Unifor spent $1 million getting him elected.
Yeah. A million?
$1 million is the price tag that he put on it. With busing people up to Montreal, paying for hotels, buying credentials, giving credentials out to people who didn't even belong to the CAW. It was a shamazo. But he spent $1 million getting him elected.
I guess they got their money's worth, and the honorable senator certainly would believe that. This whole business, to go back again, just to narrow down, I'm struck by this, that four individuals of some prominence who had a lot to do with forming Unifor don't mention raiding as part of the problem that they might have had. I mean, they just, all they say is, well, we had a little problem of corruption, which was quickly dealt with. I don't know that that's true, but at any rate, but serious issues, when they use words like solidarity and organizing workers.
I know.
I have to say, I've been around the labor movement myself a long time. I really don't like people using those words if they're not going to be concrete and specific. I'd like to know, does that mean you're going to stop raiding or not?
Yeah, you see, this is it. Mind you, those folks don't have much sway inside of UNIFOR today, but you're right. They were the architects of the UNIFOR vision, and in their recounting of it over the last 9 or 10 years, they completely missed the mark. They immediately said they had amnesia around the question of raiding, which basically ruptured the labor movement and has weakened the labor movement. So how they could be basically saying that UNIFOR lived up to its vision is beyond me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even beyond that, they talk about over the last 10 years, 9.5 years, I guess, they organized 20,000 workers. Well, I'm looking at that and saying, wait a second, that's about 2,000 workers a year. That's a pittance. That's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
CUPE is organizing 20,000 a year, not 20,000 over the period of a decade.
Yeah, this comes, by the way, the UNIFOR, if we were to follow our capitalist media, to use the clearest words, UNIFOR is the only union in the country.
Wow. They
talk as though there really actually is no other union.
Well, they've always been that way. I mean, they've always essentially, put themselves out there and said, like, you know, whatever is good for our union is what we're going to do, and the rest can be damned, right? But when they got kicked out of the CLC, or when they left the CLC, and they were essentially kicked out of all the federations of labor, I blame some of the other union leaders in the country for continuing to work with UNIFOR. I mean, there was many times I've seen press conferences at Queen's Park where yes. either Jerry Dias or his representative was sitting with other unions,
yes.
At Queen's Park. And I said, well,
it took them 2 years, didn't it, to remove them from the labor councils? Some of them were leaders of labor councils.
Yeah, I understand, yes, but they were still, currying favor with them and mollycoddling them by inviting them to speak at rallies and press conferences. I said, well, where's the penalty for raiding other unions? If there's no penalty, then why would he bother, coming back to the CLC? Because he's getting all the benefits by being part of coalitions and being part of press conferences and being part of, collective bargaining with these other unions.
It was almost like they were playing a celebrity card. We're the best known. We're famous.
Well, yeah. I mean, I as I say, I am very much down on those union leaders who don't call them out. And I mean, there's not one union leader in the country right now has actually called them out publicly over what he did with taking this backhander. What I mean? Like, because that casts aspersions upon every union leader. People are out there thinking, oh, is this the way unions run their affairs? Is this like normal?
That's an excellent question, and I want to ask that of you. I never heard of a union being approached by a company to set up a $1.2 million deal with another company, and it all being done out of the executive. Isn't that sort of unprecedented? What kind of sense does that make?
Well, obviously, they've got their friends, and this guy approached Jerry Dias and said, hey, I've got a plan. I've got an idea. I can buy all these COVID tests. Why don't you go out and promote my company to all of the employers? I mean, I've never heard of anybody doing this.
That was a part of the report that bothered me. Pardon me for interrupting, but just that point that I read in the report, and again, people just go to the UNIFOR site and read it, but they said that the individual was doing it because he thought, it was for the good of the members. But how could that be? He's not medically qualified to know whether that is actually a good product. And if it was, why wouldn't they just make it transparent and say, hey, here's a wonderful product. We want every worker to have this and may talk about it in the open.
Or use their influence with governments to basically demand that they be made free to people.
Yes.
Like, why should workplaces have to pay for these COVID tests when we've got a universal healthcare system in the country? So, just the whole profit motive alone is just sickening, that they were playing into this. And obviously they knew that whoever approached them was going to make a ton of money out of it. Mm-hmm. And was there any surprise then that they offered a bit of a kickback? Here's the other thing, though, that I was looking at. The report basically says that this person, whoever this person B was, he's only listed as person B because he don't divulge the name of the company. But this person B working for this company approached this McDonald's at Christmas. This is, in December of last year. And he says to him, "Oh, there's going to be a nice little envelope for you for helping us get this big contract." And he allegedly said, "I'm not interested in any gifts." Mm. Well, why didn't he at that point in time blow the whistle and say, wait a minute?
That would have been the time to blow it, all right.
Yeah, just say, wait a second, why are we working with this company who obviously they're shady and they're
something's
offering
wrong.
Kickback to us? And he should have gone to the president and said, "Hey, this guy offered me a kickback. I hope he's not offering you any kickbacks, and we shouldn't be dealing with this guy."
Exactly.
You know, that's the way it really should have been dealt with.
Yeah, go ahead.
He accepted the $25,000 off of Dias, went for lunch with him, and it was only like 4 days later that he decides to complain and say, "Oh, geez, maybe we shouldn't be taking this."
Yes. No, that's where I thought the report was peculiar, because they're accepting that explanation when it doesn't actually make very much sense. Incidentally, and we're speaking to Sid Ryan. Now, the Toronto Star on Sunday, deep in the article, they have a paragraph which I found fascinating. It says, "Last December, as the Omicron wave prompted a scramble for rapid tests, Ontario's Minister of Government and Consumer Services issued a warning to, quotes, unscrupulous businesses against the illegal resale of tests they received free of cost from the government." Now, I don't know why that paragraph's there, but it speaks to something you're saying, which is, of course, we're talking about a public health crisis. And as we all know, there's always a danger that somebody tries to make a buck off a crisis. And so they were being warned. Which seems to me this story actually is more of a, should now be transferred to the population as a whole. When are the Globe and the Star or the government or the police going to tell us who the company was? If somebody offers someone else money, not that we know that they did, that's an allegation. I don't know which way it might have gone, if it went. If they do that and it leads to a problem in the behavior of then that the individual, everybody has to be known. Somebody has to establish who did anything wrong. But so far, we're only talking about the union side of this.
Yeah, I know. And
everybody wants to know the company and Mr. A and Mr. B and EH.
Yeah. So it's the union that's protecting both the company who bought the COVID tests, and it's the company that supplied them. They're being protected by
Unifor. And the
sales. Why?
Yes.
I don't know. It sounds like if the name comes out, that it might cause more problems.
Well, we understand that allegedly the individual was rich, and we should cultivate the rich, allegedly.
Oh, I saw that. That was a disgraceful comment.
And somebody who's well-connected, which is allegedly well-connected.
Yeah, yeah.
It would really... by the way, what about... I thought Parliament's called hearings about such things, because they have that kind of power, because you and I can't force somebody to disclose anything. But a hearing could be held.
Well, I guess a lot will depend right now on what the police actually say. Although, personally, I wouldn't be holding my breath for the police to be laying charges. So I think a lot will depend on what it is that they will actually say. If they come out and say there was criminal intent or there was criminal action here, then I think we're going to start to see the names of companies and other players and whatever else was involved in all of this.
Well, these are tests that all of us were hearing about, and actually I, in my family and others, people scrambled to get them because their employment depended on it and their own health.
Yeah.
And then here we have this odd crack up of interest between unions and some business guys. By the way, a lot of money. And do we know that this was the, if they said to them, to the staff, go and do this, did it only happen once? Only one staffer got through to a company and got a $1.2 million dollar deal?
Bill, this is it. I mean, it seems
many questions.
Yeah, the assistants to the president, they've all got different servicing assignments. And I guess the assignment that was given to McDonald, he managed to get people to convince some of the employers to purchase, at least one employer anyways. But what we don't know is what did the other assistants do? What kind of success did they have? Dias apparently asked for a report on all of the companies that had been approached and what their responses were. That I find very curious that the investigation didn't, get a hold of that report coming in from Dias's office. I think the investigator's report was a bit shallow on some areas.
It was quite narrow in terms of what it was looking into. There was a complaint? Was it based on fact? And that was about all. And they interviewed four people.
So they only seemed to want to investigate that one incident, as opposed to trying to find out was this more widespread.
Well, they have a convention coming, so let's hope that they ask. I understand there's a resolution to rejoin the CLC. There's a resolution opposing the tier system, which they have never done or haven't succeeded with, and they've implemented it. And there's also a resolution to support the NDP, and there's going to be a resolution on one member, one vote. Their old cousin, the UAW, now has one member, one vote.
Right. I'd be very surprised if any of those make it through the floor, the convention, to be honest. These guys control their conventions pretty tightly. And, unless there's a real change of heart and there's a real blowout election and some of these issues are, part and parcel of the platform of individual candidates, I don't see those kinds of resolutions getting through a Unifor convention. I mean, I know that the CEP delegates would probably vote for to be supportive of the NDP, but I don't see the CAW. From Hargrove on down, they've pretty poisoned the name of the NDP within the CAW structure, at least, anyway.
While warming the name of the Liberal Party.
Exactly.
Well, Sid Ryan, you're more important to me as a public figure now than at any time. We need your voice, so we really appreciate your talking to us, and we're going to follow this closely.
Well, listen, I've spent 30 years in the labor movement, and I'll be damned if I sit back and be quiet when I see this kind of stuff going on, and I don't care, if people like it or don't like it. Somebody's got to call out these kinds of actions and what we see. We got to get back to, the old CCF roots, if you will, as a political party for the NDP. But the labor movement has also got to clean up its act and start becoming a bit more militant and a bit more progressive and out there on issues.
Yes.
See, what happens is we sit back and let guys like Jerry Dias be the spokesperson for the labor movement. And now look the mess that they're in.
Yes.
As a consequence of that.
You're right.
Calling him out,
They need a voice of your type. I know you're retired, but somebody, what you just said needs to be coming out of the CLC. Thank you very, very much for talking to us.
My pleasure, Phil. Okay. All the best.
Yep. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. I think we'll hear a little music, and maybe we'll come back then with Rick Sterling. Who's Sterling?